Welcome to Go West Young Podcast, your show about the outdoors and America's public lands. I'm Aaron Weiss at the Center for Western Priorities in Denver. This week, the Navajo Nation looks beyond coal. We'll talk to two tribal activists about their fight to shut down one of the largest remaining coal plants in America and what it means for the water, air, and economy there. Plus, from coal to hydropower, we'll look back at the first time electricity flowed out of the Hoover Dam this week in Western history. But first, let's do the news. The clock just ran out on America's most successful parks program. The Land and Water Conservation Fund expired on October 1st. Go back one episode in this feed for a whole show about LWCF and why it's such a big deal. The fund should be getting $900 million a year, roughly $29 every second, entirely from offshore oil and gas drilling. Right now, that is not happening. A bill to permanently reauthorize LWCF has made it out of committees on both the House and Senate sides. This thing has broad bipartisan support, but leadership in the House and Senate won't bring the bill to the floor in either chamber. So at this point, it looks like the best chance for the Land and Water Conservation Fund to come back to life will be in the lame duck session after the election. We'll keep posted on that. Meanwhile, the Trump administration's war on science is moving along like a bulldozer. In true Orwellian fashion, the Interior Department quietly rolled out a new policy called, quote, promoting open science. A better name would be cherry-picking the science we like. The big change here is that it requires interior decision-makers to only use studies with publicly available data. That, of course, is not at all the same as peer-reviewed data. So this policy will lock out science that has to keep its raw data under wraps for ethical or legal reasons. We're talking about sensitive archaeological sites or the precise locations of endangered species, even landowner names and addresses. All that data could have serious detrimental effects if it was released publicly as part of a study. So this new rule also locks out older studies that may very well be the gold standard for peer-reviewed research, but it was published before that data could be archived digitally. And of course, there's a loophole in all of this. If there's a decision that is not based on publicly available data or even peer-reviewed science, then political appointees, like Deputy Secretary Dave Bernhardt, can decide whether or not they want to use it. In other words, Bernhardt, the former lobbyist and the walking conflict of interest who's the one really running the show at Interior these days, just gave himself the green light to use industry-funded studies that haven't been peer-reviewed, while dismissing studies that have undergone peer review but can't publish their raw data. We've got a big piece up on our blog laying all of this out in detail. You may be able to click on your podcast app right now and open that link up. Needless to say, actual scientists think this policy is a disaster that will open the door to even more political interference with decisions that should be based on the best available science. Next year, the eighth largest climate polluter in America is scheduled to shut down. It's the Navajo Generating Station, or NGS, a coal-fired power plant in Arizona. It's a victory for the environment, for the air and water on the reservation and across the Four Corners region, but there's also quite a bit of consternation over the closure as well, because the Navajo and Hopi tribes depend on coal revenue. In September, a last-ditch effort to get a private equity firm to keep the power plant open failed. The day after that announcement, I talked to Percy Deal, a Navajo tribal member and an outspoken coal opponent, as well as Nicole Horseherder with the group Ton Jone Ane. I started by asking them about coal's legacy on the Navajo Nation.
You know, a lot of kids, especially infants, they are experiencing high amount of asthma, and it's often caused by the release from NGS and also Peabody. We're looking at recovery of the water, our right to use our water. We've been denied the use of our water for the last 4 to 5 years. And then there is the overall environmental impact on the wildlife, the animals, the plants, the herbs. And this year has been one of the worst drought that we've gone through. You know, Peabody sent out a release yesterday saying that the Navajo Nation and the Hopi Nation are facing a big issue now, devastation. Well, our response to that is that we've been already been devastated the last 4 to 5 years, and we are so pleased that the new developer that was supposed to take over and buy NGS has decided to not go forward.
Coal has had a long legacy here in Arizona. In fact, the largest surface strip mining in the nation is right here, just north of where Percy and I live. We live on the Black Mesa Plateau. Operation began in 1971. I was only 2 years old at the time. So I've experienced coal my entire life. I mean, at the time that I was a young child, there were still springs and seeps all over the plateau. Here we are on Black Mesa, Peabody Energy, two strip mines. One we successfully shut down in 2005. The other, Kianta Mine, which is still operational today and is part of this issue, this fight here that we're undertaking, has the coal there is dedicated to the NGS, the Navajo Generating Station. And so our fight here is the continued use of our water. So let me just backtrack again with the previous mine that we had a hand in shutting down. The Black Mesa mine had it ran a slurry line from that operation to Laughlin, Nevada, to another generating station, Mojave Generating Station. That pipeline slurried coal night and day with our precious groundwater to the power plant, where the water was separated from the coal was burnt, and the water recycled. And this water is pristine ice age groundwater. That's how it's described. It naturally meets EPA standards. It is a better quality water than Evian. This is how scientists have described this water that we rely on here on Black Mesa. This water was used annually anywhere from 4,400 to 6,000 acre feet a year. In 35 years' time, billions of gallons of water was used. Needless to say, this has drawn down our water and increased the contaminants in the water. So our water is not only harder to reach, harder to get, but it's also contaminated.
We've always believed that there are better ways to help the Navajo and the Hopi Nation to maintain their economy, their revenue, and so forth. The new owners has already indicated about a month or so ago that if he were to take over NGS, then the operation that he would be running would be at 44% of what the operation is currently. That means over 50% of the people that are working there would have to be laid off. That means less than 50% of what the revenue the Navajo Nation and the Hopi Nation are receiving, that's how much they would be receiving, less than 0.5%. So there's going to be devastation, you know, all the way around. And I don't understand why the leadership of the Hopi tribe and the Navajo tribe, meaning the president and the speaker of the Navajo Nation, continues to believe that there is something in coal. There is nothing, absolutely nothing in there. We do strongly believe in the entire southwestern United States in moving toward renewable. And we much rather be moving into that direction. I mean, the Navajo tribe, the leadership, had over 18 months to work on that. Had they been investing their resources and time into that effort, you know, it is very possible that they could have had maybe two or three major agreement from the energy company, from the states, from the cities in the Southwest, you know, an agreement, a $1 billion agreement that is ready to be signed by now. But they wasted all that time, and but there's still time that the Navajo Nation can still move into that direction. But we need the president and the speaker of the Navajo Nation to. They're the one that's supposed to be taking the lead, but they're taking the lead in the wrong direction.
Nicole had recently returned from New York, where she was pushing for that private equity firm to not buy the power plant and keep NGS open. I asked her what she knew about how that deal fell apart.
The details of all that is we're not privy to that. But we can make a number of assumptions about why that would happen. And the number one reason I would say is economics. No different than the reason the SRP and the other utilities who are part owners of NGS decided to walk away. It's purely economics. It's coal is dead. There are cheaper sources of energy. And once again, this opportunity has opened up for us to look for a future in energy, something more sustainable, something that people want, something that we can make just as reliable as coal. You know, people keep touting coal as a reliable source. That may be so, but you know, when there's no more coal in the ground, that's not reliable. And that's where we're headed. So, I'm happy to hear this. It's a small win. It's a significant win, but there's still much work to do.
You know, a year ago, the Navajo Nation, together with Salt River Project, who represented the six owners, they negotiated an extension of 2 years, and that 2 year is going to expire at the end of next year. Within that negotiation, the Navajo Nation negotiated $168 million that they would receive over a period of 30 years. Also, within that negotiation, Navajo Nation negotiated asset which totaled the value of $168 million, which includes 500 megawatt transmission line, the railroad, and pump water, or a major water pump. At the dam. And the Navajo Nation, if there is no owner, takes all this into their possession. And by using the transmission line right now that is serving NGS, you know, the Navajo Nation can easily convert that into renewable. And the second thing is that the Navajo Utility Authority is already working on, they finished the first solar project, which is, I believe, 27 point something megawatt. They have just dedicated to start the second 27 point something megawatt project. So you're looking at over 50 megawatt project that is in progress. Within that agreement that SRP and NTUA is working on, they plan to use the transmission line and work on a 500 megawatt solar project. So those things are moving forward.
And there was one issue that Nicole and Percy kept coming back to: water.
Where we live, Nicole and her family and all of her neighbors and food and mine, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of homes in that area that we don't have any water. The same is true over in on the NGS side, south of NGS, running all the way down to the southwest corner of the Navajo Reservation. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of families that don't have water. We believe that because of the two industry, you know, our fight to get our right to the use of these water is just that much more difficult when these water are in the hands of the two industry. So as soon as they go away, I mean, Right now, the Navajo Nation should be planning a water distribution to all of those communities, to all of those homes. They should have that on the drawing board right now, costing it out and getting it prepared for submission to the federal government and the Navajo Nation to bring those water to the families that are in desperate need of water. And as Nicole indicated, you know, there are other water sources, groundwater sources, but they are not potable. They're not drinkable by a human being, but they are could be used for the animals and the plants. And, you know, this year has been the worst drought ever, simply because of the climate change, and the climate change is caused by the industries. And this year, the drought has a devastating effect on all of us, every living creature.
Nicole, what are the conversations like? I imagine that we hear what Percy and your neighbors are dealing with on Black Mesa. On the other hand, you do have thousands of jobs, both at the generating station and the mine, that will go away, presumably at the end of next year. What do you tell folks who are angry or upset or just hoping to buy a little more time to keep those jobs alive?
I like this question. This is the tough question. I always tell every reporter brings that question forward, and you know that's been one of the main arguments of people who want to continue this plant. And I just you gotta quit framing it that way, because while jobs and revenues are very important, if you were to prioritize what the issues are in this entire problem, water would be the number one issue without an argument. Arguably, that would be the top priority. No life can exist without water. We need our potable water, and that means those miners and plant workers as also. Now, having said that, there are, people say, 800 jobs, but I just got a report from another media source just recently that stated that there are less than 300 jobs now at the NGS plant. There are also less than 300 jobs at the Peabody mine operation. So that's roughly 600 jobs still exist today with the two related operations there. You're talking 600 jobs across the Navajo Nation. The Navajo Nation has a population of about 300,000. There are various numbers, pieces of data that float around. Approximately 200,000 Navajos still live on the reservation. You're talking about jobs that represent less than 5% of the population. You're talking about an industry that rises and falls with the market. You're talking about an industry where these utilities owe it to the ratepayers to provide the cheapest source of electricity. Coal is not cheap anymore. Coal is more expensive now than renewables and gas. Now, this industry, as in many places across this nation, owe some type of redeployment plan to these workers. I mean, these are, without a doubt, highly skilled jobs. This workforce provides high quality skills to this industry, without a doubt. These workers are owed some type of retraining, some type of settlement, you know, early retirement, whatever it is, redeployment, a chance to work someplace else. But what we're doing is we're taking a dying industry, simply because of a couple hundred workers who want to maintain that job and keep working. No, where in this nation does industry do that for workers? The school systems don't do that. The hospitals don't do that. Any corporation out there don't do that. Why are we talking about saving the Indian nation, the Navajo nation, jobs and revenues in the name of saving the Indian? That's, if you see that, you know something's wrong with that message and something's wrong with that picture. The corporation behind this tactic, behind this propaganda messaging, is Peabody Energy. Peabody stands to lose a lot. This is an industry that once declared bankruptcy, relieved itself of some liability, came back out of bankruptcy, and now is pushing everybody, including the federal government, to save this. He's not trying to save the Indian. He's trying to save himself. And that's what people need to know out there. Nobody is there. Nowhere in this country has there been a bully so big as Peabody. I mean, I used to work for a school district where if the enrollment dropped, we let go of teachers. It was quiet is something we had to do. It was done. Nobody questioned it. Nobody argued. But this is a different situation if you make that comparison.
A question for both of you to wrap up. Looking forward to the next year, what does it hold for you and for this fight? And are you ready to declare victory yet? Or do you think there will be more hurdles in the way over the next 12 to 18 months?
Definitely there's more hurdles. Yeah, this is, like I said before, it's a small win, but it's a significant win. It gets us, I feel like, another opportunity to push the Navajo Nation in the right direction. And the right direction is to own and operate and put that renewable energy on those transmission lines, especially the 500 megawatts that the Bureau of Reclamation is dedicated to the Navajo Nation. That's what we need to do. We need to quit just being a provider of raw resources and get Navajo energy on the line and really become self-sufficient. Not self-sufficient in the interpretation and definition of the utilities that have controlled this energy for the last 50 years, or the industry, the coal mine, that has controlled the operation of the raw and of the raw resource for the last 50 years. Navajo needs to step it up and get over there and put their energy on that line.
You know, Nicole is right that we still have, you know, a number of fights to win. But, you know, we've never been at the stage before. And we need to grab it. We need to hang on to it. We need to explain to the Navajo Nation, particularly the council, because they are the final authority whether to go forward with coal or go renewable. We need to educate them fully. What does that mean? What does what happened yesterday really mean? And, you know, there's a big opportunity that exists out there, but it's going to require a lot of education of our Navajo Nation Council. The most important thing, as Nicole had explained, is water. We have to get our water and be able to use it, enjoy it while it's still clean. I mean, the groundwater, we're not too sure whether it's still clean or not, but, you know, there needs to be a total study in that. You know, people talk about revenue. One of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that the Navajo Nation has a trust fund that they invested, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And I understand that there is a total of $3.1 billion that they invested, and it's in New York stock market. You know, and then there is the Navajo Nation negotiated $168 million in the agreement relating to NGS, and then there's the federal government. They laid out $30 million for all of the community throughout the country to assist them in transitioning away from coal. Out of that $30 million, the Navajo Nation received $3 million. The Hopi tribe received $700,000. Why not put those resources together and plan this whole thing out? There has never been money set aside to hang on to coal. The only governmental entity that's done that is the Navajo Nation. So I just don't understand it. You know, Peabody is going away, coal is going away, NGS is going away, but renewable is here to stay. And the sun is going to continue to shine as long as, you know, the world lasts. So it's sustainable and it's going to last forever.
That was Percy Deal, a longtime Navajo anti-coal activist, and Nicole Horsherder with Tonajone Ane, talking about the upcoming closure of the Navajo Generating Station and the Kayenta Coal Mine. Thanks so much to both of them for taking the time to talk to us. Let's look back at this week in Western history. We just talked about water on the Navajo Nation, and now we are heading down the Colorado River to the other end of Arizona, where 82 years ago this week, the Hoover Dam first sent electricity down to Los Angeles. The dam was dedicated in 1935. It was alternately called Boulder Dam and Hoover Dam at first, with Interior Secretary Harold Ickes determined not to let Hoover's name stick. But Boulder Dam never really caught on, and Congress ended up making Hoover Dam official in 1947. After Ickes had returned to private life, he still was not happy about that. At the time, hydropower was just a side benefit. The main reason for building the dam was to collect and distribute Colorado River water by creating the massive Lake Mead, some 115 miles long. By late 1936, Lake Mead had filled up enough to start up the power generators. Keep in mind, the entire flow of the Colorado River passes through those turbines. Eventually, the river reaches a speed of around 85 miles an hour as it goes through the turbines there. A series of generators went online in the first few years, and by 1939, Hoover Dam was already the largest hydropower facility in the world. During World War II, the dam was the target of a German bomb plot. German agents were planning to put bombs on the intake towers in an attempt to sabotage the aviation manufacturing industry in Southern California that depended on the power from the dam. Private boats were banned in the canyon, and then after Pearl Harbor, Hoover Dam was closed to all visitors for the duration of the war. After the war, even more generators came online all the way through 1961, and then the power plants got upgrades again in the 80s and 90s. Today, Hoover Dam is rated up to 2,000 megawatts of power. But climate change, drought, and overuse, of course, is taking its toll. If there's not enough water in Lake Mead, the turbines can't run. As of last month, Lake Mead was only 38% full. Upstream, Lake Powell was less than half full. There's now a proposal to add a pumped hydro storage project to the dam. The idea here is to use wind and solar power to send water 20 miles downriver back up into Lake Mead. It would basically turn the lake into a giant battery that you could then tap when there's a need for more power. But of course, any time you propose messing around with the distribution of water from the Colorado River, it is going to be controversial. That pumped storage proposal is in the very early stages. The initial price tag is $3 billion. If it gets the green light, it could get built in 10 years or so. But keep in mind, we haven't seen any environmental impact studies. Congress would have to approve this deal. But California really wants to produce all of its electricity without any carbon emissions by 2045. So turning Lake Mead into a giant battery could be the next step in a story that began 82 years ago when the turbines first turned at the Hoover Dam, this week in Western history. That's it for this episode of Go West Young Podcast. Thanks again to Nicole Horsherder and Percy Deal for their perspective on water, coal, and the Navajo Nation. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode. In the meantime, keep up with our daily clips, everything you need to know about public lands in your email every day. It's called Look West, and you can sign up on our website. Also, keep tabs on us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Aaron Weiss, and on behalf of all of us at the Center for Western Priorities, thanks for listening.